Blog Talk Radio.
I really trust the Kardashians that get to enjoy a glass of Cana every once in a while.
There comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying, oh, time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We can go on, pretending day by day that the world somewhere will soon make a change. We all a part of God's great big family, and the truth, you know, love is all we need.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm only going to talk to you just for a minute or so this evening because I have some very sad news for all of you, and I think sad news for all of our fellow citizens and people who love peace all over the world. And that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible, you can be filled with bitterness and with hatred and a desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country in greater polarization. Black people amongst blacks and white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another. Or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that is spread across our land, with an effort to understand compassion and love. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times. My favorite poem, my favorite poet was Aeschylus. He once wrote, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, until in our own deep despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God." What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another, and a feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black.
Remembering Detroit rapper Charles H. Smith Jr., put your hands together.
I want to talk about Dr. Martin Luther King tonight and what I'm saying. On April the 4th, Dr. King has been dead for 55 years. And it's ironic that we got a campaign for a black man and a white man in Chicago. And some of the blacks can jump off the ship. It forgot the price that Martin Luther King paid for us to have the right to vote. They have the audacity to where it is. 55 years. In 1968, Dr. King was in Memphis, Tennessee. He was shot on Lorraine Motel down. It's been 55 years ago. April 1968, when he was murdered. And it's 2023, and black still asleep. And I have to play this.
There's a little song that we sing in our movement down in the South. I don't know if you've heard it, but it has become the theme song. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. Though I join hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it, we shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome. No, before this victory is won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more, but we shall overcome. Don't worry about us. Before the victory is won, some of us will lose jobs, but we shall overcome. Before the victory is won, even some will have to face physical death. But if physical death is the price that some must pay to free their children from a permanent psychological death, then nothing shall be more redemptive. We shall overcome. Before the victory is won, some will be misunderstood and called bad names and dismissed as rabble-rousers and agitators. But we shall overcome. And I'll tell you why. We shall overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because Carlyle is right. No lie can live forever. We shall overcome because William Cullen Bryant is right. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. We shall overcome because James Russell Lowell is right. Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future. Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. We shall overcome because the Bible is right. You shall reap what you sow. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. And with this faith, we will go out and adjourn the councils of despair and bring new light into the dark chambers of pessimism. And we will be able to rise from the fatigue of despair to the buoyancy of hope. And this will be a great America. We will be the participants in making it so. And so as I leave you this evening, I say, walk together, children. Don't you get weary. There's a great camp meeting in the Congress.
He's got the heart.
thought about trying to bring blacks together. What I want to say tonight, how did we get at this level that we mistrust each other, even in the churches, the Baptists and the Catholics, the Methodists, they fight each other. But how did we get where are we at now? What did we get here where we said homosexuality is all right? It's all right for two men to get married. It's all right. How do we get to overcome a lie? How have we get here where we don't trust our ancestors, our mamas and daddies that worked hard in the cotton field and the corn field, the sugarcane field of Louisiana, Virginia, Mississippi, Arkansas? How do we get at the point where we feel that somebody else can do it better than we can? Our young folks just snatching and grabbing and jacking a car and got gas to put in it. How did we get at this level? And I want to say that tonight. How did we get at the level where Russia is bombing other countries and we're shooting planes down and shooting planes down? The violence that have wrecked up to heaven. Y'all believe what I'm saying? That's going to be floods, tornadoes, back to back to man do what he needs to do. And that's obey God. That's a divine law. I don't care what denomination you don't care if you're atheist, whatever you might be. It's a divine law. It's a universal law. That universal law, God made the universe. And you have to obey God. So some of us got a house, a car, a little money. We forgot God. We forgot for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish. Tonight, I want to talk about a divine talk. Divine talk is God. It's still God. And everything is in divine order. Now, you might say, well, I got a different opinion. It's all right to be homosexual. It's all right for men to go with men. It's all right for me to do it. It's all right for me. You know what I'm saying? Anytime when you want to take kids and give them sex change and take girls and give them a sex change, mess with their DNA, that's a curse. When you can okay that and sit up in a church and praise God, and I don't care if Baptist, Catholic, whatever denomination, if you can do that, you are a demon. You are, and I hate to say this, you are bound to doing evil things. Romans 1 and 26, I want you to get it. Romans 1 and 26, this is what it said. I turn him up to a reprobate mind, but do that with something. It's unseemly for two men to go together. It's unseemly for two women to go together and then go adopt somebody else's children. It's unseemly. And in the Bible, I turn them over to a reprobate mind. A reprobate mind means you're going to go crazy. Whatever you see, you ain't seen anything. So how did you get, I want to say this, how did we get at this level? I'm just talking to the black community. That we have already got out with the wash water. We don't need God now. And we've got homosexuality running around in the schools and in the churches. So in the Bible says, you have to take my word, that I'm going to turn them over to reprobate mind. And the penalty for that is death. Y'all believe what I'm saying? The penalty, I know you can hang up if you want to, because some of you don't want to read, and you don't want to attain the knowledge of God. The divine talk means God is God. You can't put him in a corner, and you can't put him in a place called church. God is the God of the wind. God is the God of the universe. Can't hide the truth. Okay? You can have a loss of faith, but I got a bucket of truth that what God said in the bucket of truth, he said the wages of sin is death. The gift of God, eternal life. You don't have to listen, but this is truth. This is true talk. Divine talk is you cannot live a life and not acknowledge the God of the universe. I was reading, and I was talking to Bright Star about the 38 men that was hung, that Native Americans were hung. At the same time, Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, which y'all love, was freeing the slaves because they didn't have nothing for them to do. But he wasn't no just man, because under his administration, 38 Indians was hung in that same period. They called it the 38. Now, what I'm saying to you, the curse, the evil, have been done, and then look at Hitler, 6 million Jews Hitler killed, and the world didn't say nothing. Putin is another Hitler, and he's going to end up killing 6 million other people, and ain't nobody said nothing. But the wages of sin is death, the gift of God eternal. And the reason America catching so much of hell killed over 6 million blacks. That handcuffs brought them here, worked them. When I say reparation, some people get mad. What reparation? I don't know what that. Your ancestors' food worked day in and day out, and they didn't get paid. So if they ever got paid, you'd have had a big home. You'd have had a big business like AT&T, like General Motors and Ford. Those people had money from they had slave money. These big banks going under because they done stole from the black man. And I ain't talking about the brown man. Let me get this straight. They all got the black and the brown. No, it was black people came from Africa. Didn't nobody brown come from Africa. Didn't no Italians come from Africa. Didn't no Jews come from Africa. And, you know, they want to be political, right? Well, you got to help the browns and black. Now, help the black. The browns help themselves because they help themselves. In Chicago. And there's a what battle? Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. In April the 4th in 1960, he was murdered in Memphis. Do you know the campaign for the mayor of Chicago going to be April the 4th? That's when they're going to run off. Do you know told the police department not to protect him, and they didn't protect him, and the rest of them cut off the program where SCLC in Chicago, let me tell you like it is, was getting young men, learning them how to be cobblers, bricklayers, and they had been kicked out of school on the corners, okay? Those same kids, teenagers, they kicked out of school, they was Dr. God. Oh, y'all ain't gonna pray. The vice lord was king. The Chicago police were told not to protect him. The vice lord on the west side of Chicago protected Martin Luther King Jr. Vice lord protected Martin Luther King Jr. The disciples protected Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on the west side of Chicago. Let me say that then. They called him a gang, but they told people, don't come over here because we were, and the police pull up. What y'all doing there? We're protecting Martin Luther King. Okay. Now, that was the vice lord. That was the Blackstone Rangers. And that was the disciples. Y'all call them gangs because that's what the newspaper portrayed them. But these were young men working, trying to get jobs when the union wouldn't let them back. Y'all told you that. And after they protected Martin Luther King Jr. in Chicago, here it is. 5 years later, we got a vote. And blacks then jumped over to go with Biden. that didn't jump over and won't support the black man because they say the black man don't know what he's doing. How do the white man know what he's doing? What I'm saying, what I'm trying to get you to see tonight, racism is still deep in Chicago. I marched in Marquette Park. I marched the Cicero Road where they said, nigga, go home. In Marquette Park, we marched there. And the white people said, nigga, go home. The Ku Klux Klan was over there. The skinheads were over there. And the Nazis were over there on 71st and Western. We marched there. And Dr. King said, the Chicago is the most racist city he ever seen in America. Dr. King made that statement. And it's panning out that whites take care of whites, Hispanics take care of Hispanics, and every race take care of its own race, but black folks want to go with somebody else. And that's what happened. And this race between these two mayors is very serious to see where 55 years of Dr. King living in Chicago and marching all across the country, and some of them, what they got, being teachers, doctors, and lawyers, and politicians, because of Martin Luther King Jr. I want to say that. So that's the divine word there. You can turn your back. You can say it ain't true. Check the record out. And the young boys that helped Martin Luther King, where they at? They couldn't kill them because they were organized. They killed Mark Clark and Fred Hampton. The police did it along with Abraham Hammerhand. They come in at 4 o'clock and killed them alive. They tried to kill the Bible, but they couldn't because they were organized. They tried to kill the disciples. They were organized. They tried to kill the Blackstone. They were organized. So when they couldn't kill the leaders, the team leaders of those youth organization, you know what they did? They jumped up charges. That's where they're in jail now. Jeff Ford in jail and Larry Hoover in jail. Pepper, they in jail because they couldn't kill them. So what they did, a political move. Trumped up charges and they're in prison now. And you don't even know. But they political prison. And that's what part of this thing is. And it's serious. Let me say it again. 1968, Dr. King was killed in Memphis. 2023 is a march in Chicago for who's going to be the next mayor to run the city to stop the killings, save the babies. Congress have not stepped up to the plate to stop the killings in America. Now, it's the Republicans and the Democrats, both of them is involved because they're in Washington. If they can send money to the Ukraine, if they can do everything else, they can stop the killing in these schools and in these colleges and in these churches. That's got to happen. So it's a movement going on in town. I don't care what the nomination. I don't care what the nomination. This is real talk. This is divine talk. God going to straighten it out one way. You see what happened in California. Never had a tornado. Never had a flood. They're going to have flood, mudslide, back to back. They're going to have flood. As I speak now, you're going to hear tomorrow about tornadoes and flood going down south. The people repent and come back to God. I wish I had somebody know what I was talking about tonight because he got the whole world in his hand. You might not believe that. But I got to say, he got the whole world.
He's got the whole world. In his head, he's got his home. And in his head, he's got his whole world. And in his head, he's got the whole world in his head. He's got the whole. Head, he's
Chicago that was a hit on all the teen nations because they supported Martin Luther King. And you got some of these preachers and some of these politicians got the audacity to support somebody else, and Dr. King died for the right for you to vote, the right for you to get what you want to. And, you know, I'm not mad, but I just want to tell the truth. You know, and once you know the truth, you know them that with you. You know, we got a problem supporting each other, and that's the problem. And just some of the stuff that happened.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of...
Now, what Dr. King said, I'm going to say that again. It can be solved if we come together. Politics have kept us back. The good jobs at the good jobs in the city hall. Thank God for Harold Washington to open it up. But they've been to close it back down. Because let me tell you something. You got to understand, a doubt we stand together, we all gonna fall.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life, nor liberty, and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists.
Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor.
The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counts.
Well,
it didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
And you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages. America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will.
With the problem. At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today, many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
Dr. King was talking about Washington and the check. That means reparations. And what it means when people of other races and other up on their feet, they turn their back at the black man. And if you notice anybody that come from other countries, they didn't come as slaves. They didn't come in chains. They came as free men. But all blacks that came, we came, our ancestors came, and we're standing on the back of your mama, your great-grandmama, and wherever you at, you stand on the back of your ancestors. Some didn't make it, I share, but their spirit make us stand tall. I want to tell you tonight, you say, well, bitch, what can I do first? You can pray that people get out and vote, because big money, they didn't give values, big money, but money can't win this battle. Faith, truth, can win this battle. We got some Uncle Tom, but they're going to fall off the bridge, because God is setting high, look low. You need to make up your mind. Is you a black man? You a black woman? Or you lifting up the ancestors that fought so hard? And this is Brother Malcolm talking about that home, that house, Negro.
To understand this, you have to go back to what young brother here referred to as the house Negro and the field Negro back during slavery. There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food because he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, if the master said, we got a good house here, the house Negro said, yeah, we got a good house here. Never the master said we, he said we. That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, what's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick. He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, let's run away, let's escape, let's separate, that house Negro would look at you and say, man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this?
That was that house Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today, because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, I'm the only Negro out here. I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school. You're nothing but a house Negro. And if someone come to you right now and say, let's separate, you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. What you mean, separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa. That's what you say. Why, you left your mind in Africa. On that same plantation, there was the field Negro. The field Negro, those were the masters. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers. In the house, they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them chitlins nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were, guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of you are still gut eaters. The field Negro was beaten from morning till night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore cast-off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that field Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated the master. When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That field Negro prayed for a wind, for a breeze. When the master got sick, the field Negro prayed that he died. If someone come to the field Negro and said, let's separate, let's run, he didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here. You got field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masters are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble. Imagine a Negro, our government. I even heard one say, our astronauts. They won't even let him near the plant. And our astronauts. Our Navy. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. Just as the slave master in that day used Tom, the house Negro, to keep the field Negroes in check, the same old slave master today has Negroes who are nothing but modern Uncle Toms, 20th century Uncle Toms, to keep you and me in check, keep us under control, keep us passive and peaceful in non-violence. That storm making you non-violent. It's like when you go to the dentist and the man is going to take your tooth. You're going to fight him when he starts pulling. So there's squirts and stuff in your jaw called Novocaine to make you think they're not doing anything to you. So you sit there and because you got all that Novocaine in your jaw, you suffer peacefully. Blood running all down your jaw and you don't know what's happening because someone has taught you to suffer peacefully. The white man do the same thing to you in the street when you want to put knots on your head and take advantage of you and don't have to be afraid of you fighting back. To keep you from fighting back, he get these old religious Uncle Toms to teach you and me that just like Novocaine, suffer peacefully. Don't stop suffering, just suffer peacefully. As Reverend Cleve pointed out, let your blood flow in the streets. This is a shame. And you know he's a Christian preacher. If it's a shame to him, you know what it is to me. There's nothing in our book, the Quran, as you call it, Koran, teaches us to suffer peacefully. Our religion teaches us to be intelligent, be peaceful, be courteous, obey the law, respect everyone. But if someone puts his hand on you, send them to the cemetery. That's a good religion. In fact, that's that old-time religion. That's the one that Ma and Pa used to talk about. An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a head for a head, and a life for a life. That's a good religion. And then anybody, no one resents that kind of religion being taught but a wolf who intends to make you his meal. This is the way it is with the white man in America. He's a wolf and you a sheep. Anytime a shepherd, a pastor, teach you and me not to run from the white man and at the same time teachers don't fight the white man, he's a traitor to you and me. Don't lay down our life all by itself. No. Preserve your life. It's the best thing you got. And if you got to give it up, let it be even Stephen. The slave master took Tom and dressed him well and fed him well and even gave him a little education, a little education. Gave him a long coat and a top hat and made all the other slaves look up to him. Then he used Tom to control them. The same strategy that was used in those days is used today by the same white man. He take a Negro, a so-called Negro, and make him prominent. Build him up. Publicize him. Make him a celebrity. And then he becomes a spokesman for Negroes and a Negro leader. I would like to just mention one thing else quickly, and that is The method that the white man uses, how the white man uses these big guns or Negro leaders against the black revolution. They're not a part of the black revolution. They're used against the black revolution. When Martin Luther King failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia, the civil rights struggle in America reached its low point. King became bankrupt almost as a leader. Plus, even financially, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference was in financial trouble. Plus, it was in trouble, period, with the people when they failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia. Other Negro civil rights leaders of so-called national stature became fallen idols. As they became fallen idols, began to lose their prestige and influence, local Negro leaders began to stir up the masses. In Cambridge, Maryland, Gloria Richardson. In Danville, Virginia, and other parts of the country, local leaders begin to stir up our people at the grassroots level. This was never done by these Negroes whom you recognize of national stature. They controlled you, but they never incited you or excited you. They controlled you. They contained you. They kept you on the plantation. As soon as King failed in Birmingham, Negroes took to the streets. King got out and went out to California to a big rally and raised about, I don't know how many thousands of dollars. Come to Detroit and had a march and raised some more thousands of dollars. And recall, right after that, Wilkins attacked King, accused King and the Corps of starting trouble everywhere and then making the NAACP get him out of jail and spend a lot of money, and then he accused King and Corps of raising all the money and not paying it back. This happened. I got it in documented evidence in the newspaper. Roy started attacking King, and King started attacking Roy, and Farmer started attacking both of them. And as these Negroes of national stature begin to attack each other, they begin to lose their control of the Negro masses. And Negroes was out there in the streets. They was talking about, we're going to march on Washington. By the way, and right at that time, Birmingham had exploded, and the Negroes in Birmingham, remember, they also exploded. They began to stab the crackers in the back and bust them upside the head. Yes, they did. That's when Kennedy sent in the troops down in Birmingham. So, and right after that, Kennedy got on the television and said, this is a moral issue. That's when he said he's going to put out a civil rights bill. And when he mentioned civil rights bill and the Southern crackers started talking about they were going to boycott it or filibuster it, then the Negroes started talking about what? We're going to march on Washington, march on the Senate, march on the White House, march on the Congress and tie it up, bring it to a halt. Don't let the government proceed. They even said they were going to go out to the airport and lay down on the runway and don't let no airplanes land. I'm telling you what they said. That was revolution. That was revolution. That was the Black Revolution. It was the grassroots out there in the street. Scared the white man to death. Scared the white power structure in Washington, D.C. to death. I was there. When they found out that this black steamroller was going to come down on the Capitol, they called in Wilkins. They called in Randolph. They called in these national Negro leaders that you respect. And told them, call it off. Kennedy said, look, y'all letting this thing go too far. And old Tom said, boss, I can't stop it because I didn't start it. I'm telling you what they said. They said, I'm not even in it, much less at the head of it. They said, these Negroes are doing things on their own. They're running ahead of us. And that old shrewd fox, he said, well, if you all aren't in it, I'll put you in it. I'll put you at the head of it. I'll endorse it. I'll welcome it. I'll help it. I'll join it. A matter of hours went by. They had a meeting at the Carlisle Hotel in New York City. The Carlisle Hotel is owned by the Kennedy family. That's the hotel Kennedy spent the night at two nights ago. Belongs to his family. A philanthropic